the reverse and Devontae Mitchell allegedly did something like this and you have video and statements, he would have been arrested day one, charged, and sitting in the jail cell, probably being held without bail. So why is it different when it's a black victim? I mean, how much longer do we have to take to finish the investigation? Justice delayed is justice denied. Justice for Devontae Mitchell, justice for Sonya Massie.
And the significance of Kamala Harris weighing in with a letter, Ben Crump. We have 20 seconds.
Yeah, she's the presumptive nominee from the Democratic Party. I think it's huge her voice as vice president to say justice for Sonya Massie, justice for Devontae Mitchell. It matters.
Ben Crump, civil rights attorney representing the families of Devontae Mitchell and Sonya Massie. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for director of development to lead our fundraising team. Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Sharif Abdelkadous, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Wernoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astu, Joe John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Masood, Hannah Elias. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
Listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. This month's Board of Directors meeting will be held on Monday, July 29th at 6 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and the International Travel Group. KBOO Community Radio and ITG are organizing a journey to Cuba, December 14th to the 21st. It is a guided exchange of music, history, and landscapes. ITG supports KBOO's mission of fostering community through diverse voices. More information at kboo.fm/Cuba.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, 34 active wildfires are burning across Oregon.
Portlanders rally against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's visit to D.C.
And in international news, Monday was the hottest day on Earth so far, based on the average of global temperatures.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, July 24th, 2024. I'm Eliza Yurkov.
And I'm Reed Johnson. Oregon has 34 active wildfires, including four megafires of over 100,000 acres. That means the state has almost as many fires as Oregon, Washington, and Idaho combined. Multiple fires have destroyed more than 1,093 square miles in Oregon so far this fire season, with nearly 180 square miles torched in the past 24 hours. Officials closed I-84 between Pendleton and Ontario yesterday because of the Durkee fire. As of earlier this afternoon, a 70-mile stretch of Interstate 84 from Ontario to near Baker City was still closed. At 172 square miles, the Durkee fire was intense enough to create its own weather with a pyrocumulus cloud. Stephen Parker, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service, explained, quote, It's like a thunderstorm on top of the fire, generated by the heat of the fire, end quote. In the Columbia Gorge, the 700-acre microwave tower fire near Mosier started Monday and is still 0% contained. It's prompted evacuation notices for some 100 homes, with 431 total residences threatened. Better weather on Tuesday helped firefighters to dig fire lines on the east perimeter of the blaze, but it's not known yet whether the lines will hold. Campfires are banned at almost every Oregon state park, with much of the state under red flag warnings due to increased risk of fire.
Portland joined thousands in D.C. and across the country today protesting Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's visit to the United States. Netanyahu addressed the U.S. Congress today for the fourth time, more than any other foreign leader. He entered the chamber to a standing ovation, though some lawmakers could be heard to boo beneath the cheers. Netanyahu thanked President Biden and former President Trump for their continued support of the Israeli military actions in Gaza, which have been labeled as unlawful by the International Court of Justice. With more than 39,000 Palestinians killed in the last 9 months, Portlanders in Pioneer Square expressed their anger and grief that the U.S. continues to support Israel's assault on Gaza. Here are two people who spoke today.
Assalamu alaikum, my name is Kauthar. A few days ago, the ICJ officially ruled that Israel's occupation of all Palestinian territories amounts to apartheid and violates international law. Yet the U.S. government still chooses to come and welcome genocidal Benjamin Netanyahu to speak in front of Congress today. A wanted war criminal who's responsible for the genocide and ethnic cleansing of the indigenous peoples of Palestine. We say no to war criminals. I always say and will continue to say, as indigenous peoples of Turtle Island, we have the same oppressors as the indigenous peoples of Palestine. The Palestinians have been going through a continued genocide for the past 76 years and now 10 months. We remember the grandmother who the IDF sicked their dogs on her and killed her. We remember the bombing of tents at Rafah and Mawasi Khan Yunis in the so-called safe zones.
I know that the jets that I crewed are dropping bombs on babies. Children that look like and are my own children's age. What are you willing to risk? What are you willing to give? What if you were in Gaza? What if those were your kids?
I won't ever stop fighting or speaking up for my brothers and sisters of Palestine. We will see a free Palestine within our lifetime.
Those were sounds collected by KBOO reporter Isabel Charlet at a rally in Pioneer Square in Portland today.
Portland City Councilor Rene Gonzalez has entered into hot water again, this time apparently by accident. The mayoral candidate garnered further criticism for a tweet appreciating a comment made by Andy Ngo. Ngo is a prominent far-right figure on the social media platform X, formerly Twitter. The exchange came in the comment section of a Gonzalez post endorsing Kamala Harris for president. Ngo replied that Democratic leadership in Portland had, quote, allowed the violence to happen, end quote, in the racial justice and anti-fascist protests of 2020. He went on to commend Trump for sending in federal officers to the city. Gonzalez responded, quote, Antifa / anarchists have terrorized my family and my city. I appreciate you calling a spade and recognize you have been terrorized for it. Portland is the city I love, and it does better with a Democrat in the White House. We need to own our own problems, but Trump kicked us when we were down, end quote. Ngo gained national prominence by publishing footage claiming to show violent behavior by anti-fascist protesters. His attempts to feign impartiality have been undermined by reporting from the Portland Mercury and other outlets of his close ties to far-right militant groups like Patriot Prayer. No is currently listed in Southern Poverty Law Center's Hate Watch tracker. Gonzalez is a self-proclaimed Democrat, but his public statements speak to a social conservative movement growing in influence in Portland. He has emphatically supported a Portland Police Bureau still under monitoring to comply with the 2014 Department of Justice settlement for unconstitutional use of force. He recently promoted a homeless criminalization measure that would have punished illegal public camping with a fine of $500 or 6 months in jail. And he has raised questions about his personal ethics after misrepresenting an encounter on a MAX train as, quote, light assault, end quote.
A new agreement on plans for cleaning up nuclear waste at the Hanford site in Washington State is receiving pushback from environmental groups. Public comment was originally scheduled to close at the beginning of August, but has been extended to September 1st for the Tri-Party Agreement, or TPA, between the U.S. Energy Department, Environmental Protection Agency, and Washington Department of Ecology. Simone Anter with Columbia Riverkeeper says the new agreement means changes to the cleanup efforts that include how and where the Hanford nuclear waste is stored.
If new proposals are coming out to ship either grouted or liquid nuclear waste across the region, communities deserve to know that, deserve to have a voice, and deserve to be engaged.
The agreement for dealing with 177 underground storage tanks at Hanford took 4 years of closed-door negotiations. Columbia Riverkeeper and other environmental groups worry the new agreement opens the door for a storage method other than vitrification, which is used to turn high-level waste into glass. Anter says tribal nations in the region were not consulted about this proposal. She says even if they couldn't be a part of the agreement, the tribes should have been considered before it was presented to the public.
Tribal nations are not members of the public. They are government entities and should have been treated as such.
Anter says members of the public can play a big role in how 56 million gallons of nuclear waste at Hanford are handled.
It's really important that all these cleanup decisions put human health, the Columbia River, and the environment first. And I think public comments play an enormous role in reminding the TPA agencies about this.
That was Simone Anter, staff attorney and Hanford program director at Columbia Riverkeeper.
Monday was most likely the hottest day ever recorded on Earth, with a global average of about 62.87 degrees Fahrenheit, beating a record that had been set just one day before. This is the planet's average temperature as computed by Copernicus Climate Change Services. It means parts of the world, including the western U.S., were even hotter. The previous record, 62.74 degrees, was set on July 6th last year, besting a record that stood since 2016. Carlo Buontempo is the director of Copernicus. He said, quote, "What is truly staggering is how large the difference is between the temperature of the last 13 months and the previous temperature records," end quote. Nicholas Leach, a climate scientist at the University of Oxford, said, quote, "What we should care more about is the potential increase in extreme weather, such as heavy rainfall events or heat waves that come along with the global warming."
Kamala Harris builds momentum toward nomination and vets potential VEEPs. She and Trump take aggressive stances as plans for a September debate continue. Senator Bob Menendez says he'll resign, but will also appeal his corruption conviction. With more on the story, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Kamala Harris will fight for our future. I'm proud to strongly endorse Kamala Harris to be the 47th president of the United States of America.
House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer are the latest Democrats to endorse Vice President Kamala Harris for president. They're joining a growing list, now more than 40 senators and 100 House members. Harris spoke at her first official campaign event in Wisconsin Tuesday. As a former prosecutor, she says she's taken on predators who've abused women and fraudsters who have cheated consumers.
So hear me when I say, I know Donald Trump's type.
In May, former President Donald Trump was convicted on 34 felony counts for covering up hush money payments to a porn star. He said Tuesday that he would debate Harris in September. Harris would be the first black woman and the first of South Asian descent to be president. Tennessee Republican Congressman Tim Burchett slammed her on social media, saying she became vice president just because of diversity.
She's of Indian descent one day, and then when it fits, she'll say she's black dissent. It's just the box-checking White House is really all we've got.
But Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson insists the criticism of Harris is not about race, gender, or ethnicity.
This is not personal with regard to Kamala Harris, and her ethnicity or her gender had nothing to do with this whatsoever.
Harris is reportedly vetting a small group of VP picks herself, Senator Mark Kelly of Arizona, and three governors, Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania, Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan, and Andy Beshear of Kentucky. University of Kentucky political scientist Stephen Voss says Beshear, one of the country's most popular governors, is in a good position.
Beshear, as a term-limited second-term governor in a smaller, less prominent state, would hurt neither his career nor the Democratic Party as much as any of the other choices. Beshear is just in a sweet spot to step into the ticketmate role.
Since Biden left the race, social media has exploded with Harris-related memes and videos. 27-year-old Florida Democratic Congressman Maxwell Frost says that shows genuine support from Gen Z.
What we're seeing is a really classic example of when pop culture really gets intertwined with the politics. And it takes a special kind of candidate and a special kind of leader to inspire that. It has to be organic.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is set to address a joint session of Congress today, with sharp divisions over Gaza likely to be kept to the background. New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez will resign from the Senate next week, having been convicted on federal corruption charges. Menendez says he plans to appeal.
I have never violated my public oath. I have never been anything but a patriot of my country and for my country.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Street Roots reporter Kimberly Cortez about her latest story. City contractors continue to post sweep notifications for homeless encampments, even during the heatwave emergency. At 6 p.m., it's The Underground, produced by KABU's own Youth Collective. Tonight, they'll perform an adaptation of the radio play The Parade. Then at 7, it's PDX Progressive Talk Radio. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 55 degrees. Tomorrow's weather, partly cloudy, with a daytime high of 77. Today in history, in 1935, the Dust Bowl heat wave reaches its peak, sending temperatures to 109 degrees in Chicago and 104 in Milwaukee. The quote of the day is from Venezuelan statesman and military officer Simon Bolivar, born this day in 1783. He helped to lead countries like Colombia, Venezuela, Ecuador, Peru, Panama, and Bolivia to independence from the Spanish Empire. He said, quote, "The three greatest fools of history have been Jesus Christ, Don Quixote, and me."
Food insecurity and health inequality are big problems for indigenous communities in the Four Corners. But one local food coalition is taking it on. With that story and more, it's Jill Freitas with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas from KMBA in Anchorage, Alaska, filling in for Antonia Gonzalez. An Indigenous-led food coalition in the Four Corners is giving locally grown produce to Native families. As Clark Adamitis reports, this is part of an effort to address health inequity in the community.
In a warehouse in Cortez, Colorado, Carlos Baca, a Southern Ute and Diné chef and food organizer, is demonstrating how to fry green tomatoes in cornmeal grown on the nearby Ute Mountain Ute Reservation.
So you do flour, egg wash, and then this one's just cornmeal, so it's yellow corn.
20 indigenous families from the Four Corners area stop in to watch Baca demonstrate how to cook and to pick up packages of produce from local farmers. One woman eats Baca's fried tomato.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, thank you.
Baca has been working to feed Native people in the Four Corners region for 15 years. Now he's working with the Four Corners Food Coalition, an indigenous-led nonprofit that received a grant to set up weekly packages of local produce or indigenous shared agriculture boxes for 20 families for 16 weeks. His work here is not just about providing food. It's part of a larger social justice movement.
One of the first systems of warfare is always destruction of people's food systems, their food stores, their agriculture, to make them subservient.
One of Baca's food justice goals is to fight the effects of colonialism on Native people.
If you look at colonization and the history of it, it didn't happen overnight. The change in diet, the enforcement of, you know, government rations did massive damage to the indigenous diet and life ways, food ways, everything. If you look at our indigenous foods as microchips, you know, and that on a cellular level, everything that your ancestors ate is still in your system. So as you're plugging each one of these individual items of food back into your body, you're also unlocking those memories.
The Four Corners Food Coalition hopes to grow the food distribution program in future years. I'm Clark Adamitis.
The state of Montana is directing millions of dollars to boosting psychiatric services within indigenous communities. Yellowstone Public Radio's Kayla DeRoche reports.
Governor Greg Gianforte announced $6.5 million in one-time grants will be available to tribal nations and urban Indian communities through a proposal process. The Billings Urban Indian Health and Wellness Center is one of five urban Indian organizations in Montana to receive a portion of its funding from the Indian Health Service. It also runs on grants. Director Leonard Smith says the building needs updates to its cooling and heating systems along with other renovations.
We're trying to build resources and space that is needed to provide the services that we're developing and designing.
The funding announcement comes from a pot of $300 million lawmakers set aside from the State General Fund last year for improvements to Montana's behavioral health and disability support systems. A commission that includes elected leaders, a rural mental health care representative, and a member of disability services is in charge of recommending areas of need. The Montana Department of Health and Human Services says tribes and urban Indian health organizations interested in funding should submit proposals for how they would use the money. For National Native News, I'm Kayla DeRoche in Billings, Montana.
I'm Jill Freitas.
A Senate bill to ban congressional stock trading passed out of committee today. It's sponsored by Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley, and it's called the Ending Trading and Holdings in Congressional Stocks, or Ethics Act. It would immediately ban members of Congress from buying stocks, and it would ban members from selling stocks 90 days after enactment. It would also require members of Congress, the vice president, their spouses, and children to divest from these types of investments starting in 2027. This comes as more stock traders and investors are creating funds that copy what lawmakers buy and sell. A 2022 poll by Data for Progress found that more than three-quarters of Americans support a ban on stock trading by Congress members. The bill has 23 sponsors, and it's an issue that Merkley has pushed for years with not much movement. He said in a statement today, quote, "Members of Congress should serve the people, not their portfolios. For the first time, a Senate committee considered and passed legislation to ban congressional stock trading, a practice that appears deeply corrupt to the American people and erodes public respect for our government institutions. There should be no question about whether a lawmaker is voting on or writing legislation in the best interests of their constituents or the best interests of their investments," end quote. Merkley says he'll push to take the bill to the Senate floor for a vote as soon as possible.
A university in Eastern Oregon is figuring out ways to prevent rural brain drain. Eastern Oregon University was officially designated, quote, Oregon's rural university by the state in 2018, which kickstarted new efforts from the school to serve rural communities. One effort is a partnership with Wallowa Resources to create the Rural Engagement and Vitality, or REV, Center. Tim Seidel with Eastern Oregon University says the center provides hands-on learning opportunities with organizations in rural communities.
happen within our own region, the more they're aware of the opportunities in our own region, and particularly a rural region, and they don't see it as a shortfall or an issue, or they've got to go somewhere else to get that experience. They can get it right there in their hometown, or they can get it right nearby.
The REV Center is part of the Global Education Partnerships for Innovation in Communities Network and includes a program that connects students to jobs in regional communities. Seidel says his university also started offering an online master's program in clinical mental health counseling to address the shortage in rural communities.
We also got letters from regional behavioral health professionals saying, please help us get this program up and running. We really are looking to you to help deliver this. You're the experts in this, but we need these professionals, and we need to do it without them having to relocate somewhere else.
Seidel says the university's efforts are an important collaboration of community and legislative leaders, schools at every level, and members of these rural areas.
We found that by working together, we can solve so many problems rather than looking to some kind of outside resource. And people really want that in these small rural communities.
That was Tim Seidel, Vice President for University Advancement with Eastern Oregon University.
Members of the Service Employees International Union, or SEIU, from across the country met with the Biden-Harris administration at the White House last week. As Eric Tagedoff reports, that includes unionized nursing home workers in Washington State.
Nursing home workers in Washington State have come back from the White House with renewed resolve to fight for their union contract. A delegation of SEIU members was in Washington, D.C. last week to meet with the Biden-Harris administration. Grinesh Chetty, who works at the nursing home company Aegis Ravenna in Seattle and is a member of SEIU 775, was among them. He says members of the administration encouraged him to file a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board over contract negotiations with his employer.
Even we were told that a lot of big corporations like Aegis, what they do is they intentionally start letting go of employees that do support the union or want a union.
Chetty and his co-workers voted to form a union in March 2023, but the union has yet to secure its first contract. A spokesperson for Aegis Living says its objective is to foster a strong and unified team environment, and that it's proud of its 2,700 employees serving 2,500 residents. Chetty says working at Aegis can be stressful, which is why workers formed a union.
We've been understaffed. We've been asking for more staffing, better pay, better retention of employees. People work there about 3 to 6 months and they end up leaving because the employees aren't taken care of.
Chetty says retention is especially important in a nursing home setting.
Once you form a relationship with the resident and then you know exactly what they want, you know exactly what time they prefer things, it makes it better and easier and convenient for them where they're happier.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tagedoff.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wants his weekends to be news-free.
One weekend piles on another. Trump barely shot, Secret Service in public trouble, Biden withdraws, Harris anointed. What's next? I wish Harris would choose a woman as a running mate, but that's not going to happen. Despite the electoral power of women, it's more important to get money excited than voters, and many of the big donors are old school men. Republican pep rally came through with all the expected hyperbole, hallucinations, and lies. We get a couple weeks off till the Dems do something similar. Not as nasty, but no more relevant or trustworthy. Otherwise, it's another summer of wildfires. Not good for breathing, but what a beautiful orange moon. Heat that overstays its welcome repeatedly, and 3 months of drought. What's newsest is now. Blueberries, blackberries, tomatoes starting to blush. Weekends aren't for news, but for festivals, picnics, river floats. Be careful out there. More people strolling neighborhoods and forests, experiencing what phones can't deliver. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, July 24th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Reed Johnson, and Isabel Charlet. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Jill Freitas, Alex Gonzalez, and Catherine Carley. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eliza Yurkov.
And I'm Reed Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our great members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth and have a good night.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm here with Kimberly Cortez, reporting intern at Street Roots, to talk about her latest story for the paper. It's called City Contractors Post Sweep Notifications Amid Heat Wave. Mayor Ted Wheeler declared a state of emergency July 2nd due to extreme heat, but city contractors continued posting sweep notifications on homeless encampments throughout the emergency. Welcome to the show, Kimberly.
Hi, Althea.
Thank you so much for being here. So, data analysis by Street Roots found that a city contractor, Rapid Response BioClean, posted 121 encampment sweep notifications during the heat wave and during the state of emergency. How did you determine this, and what is so significant about it?
Yeah, so the Homeless and Urban Camping Impact Reduction Program, or HUCURP, posts sort of this data every single week, just giving the public an insight on how many encampments are sleeping a week, you know, how many of those people went to shelters. And we were aware of postings happening or actual sweeps happening, because this isn't the first time that the city has said that they were going to pause, you know, sweeping encampments during an extreme weather emergency. In the story, I talk about how this happened in 2022. So we were sort of aware that something